Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Felicita ya Mendiliva. ¡Qué mamón eres! Ahí va Montiel, toma carrera. ¡Chuta Montiel!
¡Sí! ¡Vamos!
¡Para la
izquierda! ¡Gol!
¡Otra más!
Never in doubt, was it? Hello, everyone. Welcome to La Liga Lowdown, where Sevilla have become Europa League champions for the seventh time. I'm your host, Matt Clark, delighted to be joined by Paco Pollet, who already knew this was going to happen. He tweeted earlier in the day, Sevilla are going to do their thing. Paco, they did their thing. What a spectacle that was. Nearly 2.5 hours of football. Well, some say it wasn't football, but dramatic final. Penalties again. Argentinians all over the place with penalties. What a story, what a night. Paco, your first thoughts?
Yeah, possibly one of the first games ever, which begins actually in 1 month and finishes the following one, as we had, because we're recording this right now after the game, just minutes after the game ended. And yeah, it was a long one, a very, very long one, because many things happened in the second half. You know, Sevilla's reaction, Suso bossing the game, Mourinho bringing it down into the mud with all of the fuss in the sidelines. I don't know. It was, as a neutral fan, it was very enjoyable. You know, obviously as a Spaniard in these kind of games, I tend to favor, you know, the Spanish side. And even though Sevilla was back in the day one of the, you know, natural opposition for Valencia, that train, you know, departed just quite a long time ago. Sevilla are at this point miles away in the sense of playing for goals, playing for silverware, playing for glory ultimately. And in this case, I think that Sevilla had, you know, they had their game plan. It didn't really work during the first half, but in the second one, I think that Ben Lieber was able to adjust a few things here and there. Obviously, Suso, as I said earlier, was crucial in the way Sevilla managed to, you know, turn things around. And I think that they had the chances to finish the game in the 90 minutes, but they weren't lucky with the finishes. And yeah, whenever you go into the, you know, the extra time and later into the penalty shootout, it's, you could say it's a lottery, but it's less of a lottery whenever you have Bono under the sticks. And once again, he showed he's possibly one of the best, if not the best, specialist in this kind of, you know, events in a game. I would say that Dibu Martinez over in Argentina, and if we speak about European football and club football, I have to say that Bono is possibly second to none in this sense.
Yeah, an incredible shootout. Going back to the first half, like you said, Roma came out of the traps pretty well. We maybe expected them to be quite defensive as a kind of Mourinho don't concede type mentality. But they were on the front foot in that first half, and it was a really well-worked goal, lovely through ball and a fantastic finish by Paulo Dybala, who was the player that most Roma fans wanted to play most. He was the key man, the talisman. Maybe wasn't 100% fit and therefore couldn't play the entire game, but he showed his quality with that opening goal, didn't he?
Yes, and I think that it was a bit controversial because of the way the build-up of the play happened. I think that it was Rakitic, the player who had the control of the ball in the midfield. I think he was fouled, but the referee didn't. And I think that split second of Sevilla player just frozen on the pitch was taken advantage by Roma with that great assist to Dybala, who, you know, one-on-one against the goalkeeper is often the best bet that you can have. Sevilla scored the first one. They opened the game. And I think that things were more or less according to plan, at least in José Mourinho's playbook. But I don't think that they really showed more tools throughout the 90 minutes and later during the extra time. I think that Roma played a very limited game in a number of senses. I think that they were just trying to score a goal regardless of how they did it, taking advantage of a single pinpointed action in the first half, and later try to amass as many players as possible just in front of their goal. You know, José Mourinho as the perfect chauffeur, as the perfect driver of the bus, parking it in front of the goal, and you could see that during the second half. Ultimately, the stats, they show very similar numbers in shots on target, but the second half was, you know, Roma being blown away by Sevilla out of water. I think that Sevilla were far superior both in ball possession and in chances. But again, I think that Suso was crucial in many of the changes that took place. And we have to say, obviously, that the goal was scored by Mancini on its own goal in the second half. But I think that, you know, you had Nesiri over there. You had many players having their attempts. Overall, I think that eventually Sevilla would have leveled the game. You know, if it wasn't Mancini with an own goal, something else would have happened. But this game was more or less destined to finish with a draw during the 90 minutes because of the way both sides played. And then I think that overall we have to say that the win was fair on Sevilla. I think that they tried it more and then they definitely desired it the most. You know, they desired the win. They had the drive to win, the thrive to, you know, try to turn the game around. And overall, in a game where both sides were not possibly at their peak level physically, just the little details were those which made the difference.
Mm. And as you say, that equalising goal coming from across from Jesus Navas, who was fantastic tonight. He played the 90 minutes, was brilliant up and down, especially in that second half, getting the crosses in, perfect ball, which led to the equalising goal. He was present in Sevilla's first two Europa League UEFA Cup wins, as it was then, and now he's been present in the most recent two. An incredible career for him. But just back on the changes at halftime, how, in your eyes, did Mendilibar get it so right that he's managed to shift the momentum so decisively?
Well, in many ways, I think that he just took a peek on the things that they hadn't done well, you know, throughout the first half. I think that overall, Roma were able to press higher, and that kind of aggressiveness, intensity, didn't really sit well with the way Sevilla wanted to try to play with the ball from the back. And they had quite a few loose balls over there, which were quite dangerous on Roma's feet. But yeah, if you check out the subs, I think that Brian Hill wasn't really, you know, in many ways, wasn't really fine-tuned in this game. I think he was overwhelmed by Roma's defense.
Whereas for Enchufado,
not Enchufado, yes, definitely. I've seen Brian Hill very closely last season over here in Valencia, and some games really don't work for him. They don't work for him. They don't sit on a place where he can take advantage of a specific defender or a specific defensive system. Whereas for Elie Lamela, look, you know, he has more experience, more gravitas. He knows how to play like high tension games, and this one was a very high tension game. And obviously, Oliver Torres starting the game, he didn't work properly in the midfield, and Suso came in the 46th minute, you know, just starting the second half, and he changed everything. And later, you know, checking out the ways Roma tried to, you know, I would say, fortify their defense with Belotti, with Nandlum worked quite more pressing high than Dybala, who was, as you said earlier, not at the best of his capacities, capabilities. But, you know, Tellez had to lead the game on Sevilla because he had physical problems. And yeah, Montiel coming in, Recic coming in. Overall, most of them very physical players, you know. And in that sense, I think that it helped Sevilla quite a lot, you know, to be able to endure the pressing throughout the second half, leveling the game, trying to get the game winner. And after being unable to do so, just hang in there throughout the 120 minutes. As you said, Jesús Navas left the game and he had, I believe it was two huge bags of ice in both of his calves because he couldn't just, he wasn't able to walk. He was so tired and as many other Sevilla players. So when it came down to the penalty shootout, it was everything in Bono's hand and everyone saw what had happened.
Mm. A gladiatorial effort against the Romans and they took it all the way to penalties. And, well, I saw a stat before the shootout that Mourinho's side had lost 8 out of 10 shootouts, which is quite surprising, really. But that was obviously a good omen. And we know Bono is a pretty, as you've said, fantastic penalty saver. And he saved 2 in the shootout, didn't he? Managed to save one with his legs and one with his fingertips onto the post. And as for Sevilla, I mean, who took the penalties? We had Eric Lamela, Argentine. Lucas Ocampos, Argentine, who started the season at Ajax, remember? Then we had Ivan Rakitic, captain after Navas went off, basically a Sevillano by adoption, course, Croatian. And then Montiel, what a story. He scores the winning penalty in a World Cup final. Then he misses, but oh no, it's a retake because the keeper's off his line. So he gets a second chance and then he puts it away and he almost can't believe it. And he's like, yep, we've done it again. I just score winning penalties in finals. Incredible performance. It was almost speechless at the end there. Fans were on the pitch. Mendilibar was ice cool. I mean, we'll talk about him in a moment, but just the shootout back, how good were that? How good was Sevilla there?
It was fate, you know. I think that Montiel scoring the winner was already written down somewhere quite a while ago, and today only the execution just happened today, you know. The actual fact happened today, but it was already set in stone. And yeah, I think it's quite the story, you know. Montiel is going to remember the 22-23 season as something which he possibly will be unable to top as a professional football player. But yeah, overall, I think that they were very, very, you know, secure, confident of themselves. I think that Sevilla's players had that kind of, I would say, in Spanish we say pozo, you know, it's like the gravitas, would say the translation. They have been there, most of them. Yeah, Montiel is young, okay, but he has scored, you know, the winning penalty in a World Cup final. Eric Lamela is very experienced. Lucas Ocampos, he suffered a lot this season, as you said earlier, with his transfer move last summer, and he had to come back to Sevilla. He said so after the game, you know, on the pitch flash interview. He said that he had a very, very rough beginning of season. He had endured much pain, out of his element, fish out of water, you know. And when he came back last January, it seemed that everything clicked back together. And we have seen the best version of Ocampos in this second stretch of the season. And yeah, as you said, Ivan Rakitic, captain, legend, Sevilla's marquee player for many, many seasons. And he had to score, you know, he couldn't miss in this penalty shootout. And regarding Roma, I think that overall Bono was crucial. Obviously, Mancini, the first miss, you know, he took an attempt with a very, very strong strike just center of the goal, and Bono was lucky to save it with his feet. But the second one was amazing, you know. It's just amazing how he stretches, I would say, far more than any human being can stretch, and able to just arrive to the post. You know, he hasn't really had the time. The reaction speed is out of this world. And I think that this outlandish effort by Bono was rewarded appropriately with that save and setting everything, you know, already for Monty and to just finish it.
Mm. I mean, the story is remarkable, isn't it? Sevilla, they hadn't even won a home game in the league until New Year. They'd gone through three. They'd gone through Julen Lopetegui, Jorge Sampaoli. Then they appoint José Luis Mendilibar in March. And the main goal is to avoid relegation. They were in genuine peril of relegation. Mendilibar himself was relegated with Alaves last season. He comes in, his first European game, apart from the Intertoto Cup with Athletic Club 15 years ago, his first Europa League game is at Old Trafford. The lineup we're all questioning, thinking, oh, he's basically throwing the competition.
Yeah.
They're 2-0 down in 21 minutes. You're thinking, oh, this is a long night. Sevilla are going to get embarrassed at Old Trafford here. But they come back 2-2, take the tie back to Seville. That remarkable night, all in white, 3-0, hammering. Then the Juventus tie. Once again, the home support is incredible. And then this final. I mean, it's remarkable to come up against Jose Mourinho, who's won all of his European Cup finals dating back 20 years. They hadn't even conceded a goal in the European final since 2003. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Mendilibar just gets it done. It's a remarkable human story because he's come so far. He's come through regional divisions, Tercera, Segunda, promotion, relegation, so many years at Eibar, being a legend at that club. Just such a genuine, you know, one of the real good guys of the game. And it's so pleasing to see him succeed because he deserves this. So yeah, if you wouldn't mind just saluting José Luis Mendilibar.
Yeah, it's some sort of, you know, Ted Lasso-ish example of a manager in the real world, you know, plucking that kind of feel-good attitude and, you know, believing that ultimately everything will go okay out of the fiction and into, you know, a team which sorely needed that kind of manager. And by the way, you have to, you know, just see the contrast between the attitudes of both managers during the sidelines. As I said earlier,
yes.
Mourinho, you know, provoking chaos throughout the whole game. And ultimately with that, I wouldn't say proper gesture of, you know, just throwing away the silver medal because he seems to not be enjoying the fact of being the finalist and not the champion. And I have seen, by the way, just a few seconds ago, a picture of the kid in the stands who was able to just catch mid-air the Mourinho thrown medal. He's going to be like the happiest kid ever, even though his team lost. But I think that Mourinho didn't behave properly in that sense. But, well, leaving that aside, I think that Mendilibar deserved this kind of recognition, this kind of silverware, and also this kind of, I wouldn't say tail end, because he had plenty of years ahead of him as a manager, but this kind of vindication for what he really represents in the world of football. I said something similar a few seasons ago in this podcast, talking about Paco López, who has that kind of background, you know, coming from the lowest years of Spanish football, as you said, Segunda, Preferente, Tercera, Segunda B, those kinds of levels, of tiers, where football is far less glamorous than what we often see in top flight, and also what we did see over in Budapest tonight. And him winning in spectacular fashion, as he did, because he, you know, he didn't have an easy road. As you said, he knocked out Manchester United, he did knock out Juve, and in the final he did knock out Roma. All of them are, I would say, European giants, most of them. And Sevilla did it just sticking to what they know well how to do, to their DNA, and not really tackling experiments in any of the games. I think that Mendilibar tried to bring things down into the more palatable ways of players understanding what he really want from them. And, you know, they really, really understood the message. And when Sevilla had to play direct football, they did. When they had to keep ball possession, they did. When they had to play with two strikers, they did. When they had to open the field and try to get like two attacking wingers crossing balls into the box, they did. I think that the number of play styles and of different variants that we have seen of Sevilla in the last 3 months have been remarkable. And overall, I think that capping off the season this way, with this kind of trophy being conquered, is possibly the princess story, you know, like Disney-wise, the best way to finish the tail end, like, and they happily lived ever after. This is the message for José Luis Mendilibar tonight over at Budapest.
Perfectly put, Paco. Indeed, the definition, the textbook definition of proper coaching put into practice. So delighted for him, delighted for Sevilla. They've won their seventh Europa League against the club from the city of Seven Hills. So magnificent seven, seventh heaven, whatever you want to say, it applies to Sevilla. We'll be back after the break to preview the final match day in La Liga. We've still got Conference League positions to be sorted, as well as that dramatic battle at the bottom. So stay with us. We'll be talking all about that after this short break.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Welcome back to La Liga Lowdown. We've been talking about Sevilla's magnificent seven, but now we must look ahead to match day 38 in La Liga. We have two split kickoff times this week. The five games which will determine Conference League place, and then five games which will determine the final relegated side. Of course, Espanyol joining Elche last weekend. We also know that Granada and Las Palmas will be coming up for next season, so congratulations to them. Let's quickly talk about Conference League first, Paco, because then we'll obviously do a deep dive on the relegation. As things stand, it is incredibly tight. There's still, four teams could still make the seventh spot and the Europa Conference League. Mm-hmm. Sevilla are one of those. And we must just say that if Sevilla do finish seventh, then Spain won't have a Conference League side because, of course, Sevilla are now in pot one of the Champions League. So if any other club finishes seventh, Spain will have eight representatives, five in the Champions League, two Europa League, and that one Conference League spot. So as things stand, we've got Osasuna, Athletic Club, Girona, Rayo and Sevilla all in contention for that. Mallorca take on Rayo, Osasuna take on Girona, which could be almost a direct playoff. Real Madrid host Athletic Club, looking very tough for Ernesto Valverde's men. And Real Sociedad, freshly top four finishers, host Sevilla. So I'm pretty sure there won't be many fresh legs in that Sevilla lineup, but that'll be a party atmosphere for both sets of fans. And lastly, Villarreal hosting Atletico Madrid, which is kind of a dead rubber there, really. So yeah, Paco, who do you think is best placed to get seventh spot? And who would you like to see get seventh spot?
Well, those are two different questions. You know, I was going to answer the first one, actually, and the second one just shifted a bit my priorities. Obviously, that Real Sociedad-Sevilla game is going to be fun to watch, because Sevilla are going to play after partying very, very hard and having a huge level of physical problems, okay, I would say it that way, and also Real Sociedad, because they were able to, you know, qualify into the Champions League last week, so this week has been very, very relaxed for them, so this game is going to be very interesting to watch. I don't think that Sevilla are going to finish seventh. I think that overall, if we see the, you know, all the potential combinations and also the opposition with the with teams fighting for things, overall I would say that Osasuna are the better suited to just secure that spot. First up, because I would think that it would be the perfect recognition for their amazing season, you know, finishing as the finalist in the Copa del Rey against Real Madrid, and in seventh place in La Liga. They are playing Girona, so if they win, you know, they knock out one of the direct opposition in the race to finish seventh. And especially as I see the rest of the teams, you know, Rayo Vallecano have been not very reliable lately. You know, the end stretch of the season hasn't been that impressive. And whenever you go to Mallorca, you always suffer, regardless of Mallorca being, you know, saved in the desert between the top tier sides and the lower bottom of the standings. And I was going to talk about Athletic Club, but once again, they are not reliable, you know, and they are facing Real Madrid in their last game at El Bernabeu. So overall, I think that they are going to have it very tough. In my view, I think Osasuna will finish seventh, and I think they surely deserve it because they have done and performed an amazing feat this season.
I would agree with that. Yeah, I think for Girona, I would like to see them do it, but I think, and again, Michel has done a great job there. He's had a contract extension until 2026, but I do think they're probably going to lose a lot of their loan players, so they might struggle to compete on all fronts. Similar for Rayo, with Iraola leaving, it might be a struggle for them to try and, you know, because I think they'll need to just be stable in mid-table next season. Athletic, like you say, it's going to be a bit of a strange atmosphere. Potentially Karim Benzema's last game for Real Madrid, so that's one to watch. And yeah, I think you're right. I think I'd like to see Osasuna, and I think they've probably got the best chance if they can do the job at home to Girona. Right, relegation, Paco. I know this obviously affects you with Valencia. It's very dramatic. There's five games which will decide the final spot. Six clubs still could go down. Celta host Barça at Balaidos, which is a very perilous-looking fixture, even though Barça are already on the beach. Elche host Cádiz, which Elche are playing quite well lately with the freedom of being carefree of already knowing what their situation is. Espanyol, of course, already relegated, host Almeria, who are awful on the road, so that could be a real harum-scarum fixture. Betis against Valencia, Joaquin's final game against one of his former clubs as well, just to add to the drama. And then Real Valladolid against Getafe, which is probably the most direct head-to-head face-off of the battles. So, I mean, Paco, there's so few points between them. We've got Cádiz 13th on 41 points, Getafe 41 points, Valencia 41 points, Almeria 40, and then Celta, who have dropped like a stone in recent weeks. They are just above the drop zone on 40. And then it's Real Valladolid, who are currently in the most danger, on 39. Of course, if Real Valladolid beat Getafe, they know they're safe, whatever happens. There's so many permutations. Romanda Arquer has written a fantastic piece for us on our Substack about the permutations and what teams need to do. Pretty much, everyone depends on themselves. If they win their games, they're safe, pretty much. So how do you see it?
Yeah, I had my own, you know, Charlie Day meme last Monday with all of the different, you know, combinations. I believe there are 243.
And, only 243.
Yeah, there are 243 combinations, you know, ultimately win, draw, defeat. Yeah. It's 3 per 3 per 3 per 3 per 3. 2-4-3, more or less, okay? Because there are five games, ultimately. You have six teams involved. And I was doing all of the math because Valencia were one of the teams, obviously, involved. And Valencia only fall to Segunda in 2 out of 243. It's less than 1%. But you might remember that banner over in Barcelona many years ago, like 1% chances, 99% faith. So in this case, Valencia are just the opposite. You know, only 1% chances of doom, 99% chances of, you know, not fuzzing around and getting the job done. But I don't know why Valencia always tend to overcomplicate themselves. But regardless of this, as you said, every single team, it's the first time in quite a few years which happens, where this happens, depends on itself, okay? So teams know that if they win the game, they're saved.
Yep.
That's possibly the best kind of, you know, treasure that they can have, and the best kind of motivation, you know, that they don't depend on other random results and scores and things happening at the same time. So checking out all of the games, and especially the head-to-heads, because as Roman wrote down in his Substack piece, it's very weird how things work over here. Remember, if two teams draw with the number of points, it's like a direct head-to-head depending on the two games that they play between them.
Yep.
During the season, and also number of goals scored, yada yada. But whenever you have like triple empate, quadruple empate, like three teams, four teams, five teams with the same number of points, you have to produce like a mini league between all of the results happened between them this season. And in those cases, it's actually amazing how Celta have dropped the ball. You know, they cornered themselves into having to beat Barca in the last game of the season in order to just be clear of danger. Because in any other scenario, like losing the game, 40 points, winning 1 point, 41 points, they would be severely undermined in their chances to remain. Valladolid might seem the team which has it the most difficult, because they are bottom of the pack, 18th. They would drop today before the game is played, but they're playing against Getafe. So if Valladolid win the game, it's lights out. You know, they win the game, they remain and party over Pucela. Getafe can lose the game and remain in La Liga perfectly. Mm. Because under them, we have Almeria, we have Celta. And, you know, overall, it's very, very weird. I think that Valencia, even though they might not have the best shot of winning the game against Betis, remember that they are going to have, as you said, the celebration of Joaquin's career when he's retiring. And I think that the special mood of the ground is going to involve, you know, surround everything which is happening. I think that even if Valencia lose the game, the number of combinations, it's so weird, like many, many things have to happen in order for Valencia to get relegated. So, and Cadiz have the, you know, I think that they have the best chance overall, because they have to visit Elche. And remember that whatever happens over there, you know, Elche winning the game would be the spark which would ignite everything. Because if Cadiz get 42 points, one draw, or 44, they win the game. Elche don't really matter. They don't mind because they already relegated. But the rest of the teams do.
Yep.
Because the quadruple draw wouldn't happen with Cadiz skyrocketing with 44 points. So Elche have no reason to go to win the game, and Cadiz have no reason to lose that game.
Mm.
So if you do the math, I think that is going to be one of the crucial points of the competition. Who is going to get relegated? I don't know. I have no clue. But after the way they have shot themselves in the foot, in the last few weeks, which is yours, by the way?
I've got a funny feeling, Celta. I do.
Yeah, I was going to say Celta. The way Celta have just mingled with games where they should have gone to win them, and they didn't. I think that they have slowly gotten themselves like tangled in the spider web, and they are the fly waiting haplessly to, you know, be eaten alive in the last game.
It's their cycle as well. They do this. They just about stay up, then they do all right under a manager, and then they dip and they sack him, change manager, perform well, then it goes back again. And Iago Aspas is not scoring anymore. Their salvation, their talisman, is not delivering right now. So
yeah, but many things have happened, you know. Many things have happened with Iago Aspas. As you said, his form is not the best. Their wonder kid at the beginning of the season isn't really working at this point, you know. I think that after speaking a lot about
Gabri Vega and his future.
Yeah, Gabri Vega's future at the beginning of the year, you know, his performances were very, very impressive. I think all of the transfer talk has really distracted him from, you know, the point and the issue and really performing well in the games. And that is seriously working against his own club. So many things working against Celta in this last match day. And the second choice, you know, I think that ultimately comes down to Valladolid-Getafe. If Valladolid lose the game, obviously it's curtains for them. But I don't know why. I think Bordalás knows that the draw might be the way to go. And I expect shithousery in its purest form in this game. You know,
what we've seen from Mourinho today, forget it.
Absolutely. Champagne football that we did see over in Budapest. We're going to see exactly the same over in Pucela because, you know, Bordalás is very smart. And he came to do the job and he is about to get the job done ultimately. But yeah, you know, he knows that the draw benefits Getafe, obviously winning the game too, but I think that they're going to aim for that goalless draw or 1-1. I don't know. And ultimately, I think that he will be able to achieve it. So, unfortunately, my bet for relegation is Celta. I wouldn't have expected to say this 2 months ago, but here we are.
Yeah, here we are indeed. Well, we'll be back on the other side to see how it's all fallen and to see which teams are celebrating and which teams are crestfallen on the pitch at the end of full time on Sunday night. And La Liga, why on earth did you make it 9 o'clock? Please, why? But okay, that's another story. Pray for the podcasters. Anyway, on that note, congratulations to Sevilla. Enjoy La Liga weekend. Paco, thank you so much for your time. Pleasure to speak to you, as always. We'll be back on the other side. Until then, check out our Substack. Check out La Liga Lowdown on Twitter. And we'll see you soon. Adios. Y es por eso que hoy vengo a verte, sevillista seré hasta la muerte. La Giralda presume orgullosa de ver al Sevilla en el Sánchez Pizjuán. Y Sevilla, 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 aquí estamos contigo, Sevilla, compartiendo la gloria en tu escudo, orgullo del fútbol de nuestra ciudad.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.